You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Wild times, brother. Great to be here with you.
Great to be on again. Thanks.
This is take two. And as I was saying in take one, I've been asked to intro my guests better for the new TFTC freaks who have joined us. We're blowing up. The show's growing. It's incredible. For any of you new audience members out there, I'm sitting down with Mark Suman, co-founder of Maple AI. He is at the cutting edge of AI privacy, which is a topic that I think is becoming more and more on top of people's minds as they begin to experiment with the tools that are hitting the market, particularly the agentic tools, and they're realizing how much access they're giving over to some of these large language models, particularly provided by OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google. And so I figured it'd be a good day, a good week to get an update from Mark, because I think we are, I don't want to say we're at like this inflection point where we're going to go one direction or the other. I'm actually pretty optimistic because of individuals like yourself and the team over there at Maple with you and Anthony, building your tools. So maybe an update for the freaks who didn't catch our last, or who did catch our last episode, where we talked about what you guys are building at Maple and how you're incorporating it. What has happened in the last 6-8 months since we last met?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the intro. Man, it's not what's happened in the last 6 months. It's like what's happened in the last 6 days. Everything is changing so fast. It feels like a whirlwind trying to keep up with the AI news. So I guess for your listeners, if they feel overwhelmed by this, like I share your sentiment. A lot has happened. I mean, Maple has grown a ton. We've added in live web search. So now it's not stuck in the past, but it can grab current information. But it doesn't do it like in a private way where we use the Brave Search API, we protect your identity, all that kind of stuff to go out to the web and fetch information for you. And then back in like December timeframe, we really started leaning into this agentic AI stuff and wanted to put an agent inside of Maple and do some kind of chat assistant within Maple. And then at the same time, obviously other people had the same idea. So this whole OpenClaw thing jumped on the scene. We'd been looking at it and then they came on. And so we're like, okay, this kind of validated this idea. People really want to have some kind of AI that's like constantly working for them. So we're building that in the Maple, not OpenClaw itself, but similar functionality. What else do we have? We've got really powerful reasoning models now. So KimmyK 2.5 is like on par with a lot of these Anthropic, a lot of these OpenAI models. So you get really good intelligence. You get really good agentic coding, math computation. There's all sorts of great things that are in there now. And the open source models have caught up. Like it's indisputable now. They are as good as the frontier labs. And so we need to stop thinking that like using open source models is like a subpar experience. We just need to build better tooling around them to make them even more competitive.
I think that's key. The tooling is somebody's been using OpenClaw for a while now in AI terms. It's insane how beneficial it has been to our workflows and extending my productivity here. But I'm always acutely aware of what's happening behind the scenes. I've got mine living in a VPS. It doesn't have control of my computer or anything. And that is for a reason. It's because I know that the sort of walled garden model providers have access to everything I'm doing when I'm paying their models. And so I think you are far better suited than I am to basically explain what's happening, because I think a lot of people are out there experimenting with OpenClaw, connecting it to Claude's API, OpenAI's API, and just running wild. What is happening when people are doing this and running wild behind the scenes?
Yeah. You're effectively giving some kind of computer software full access to your computer. You're giving some app access to everything on your computer to run programs, to read files, It really is like a virus. Back in the 90s and 2000s, we were like so nervous about viruses on our computers that we would install McAfee antivirus software or Norton or whatever they were to block these kinds of things. And now we're like welcoming them onto our system. And, but they behave the same way. But this time we are, you know, inviting it in and we feel like we can control it. So I would just say, like, remember that as you're installing this stuff, you're giving it like full root access to everything that you have, which, I commend you for running it in a VPS. That's a smart way to do it, or run it on a totally different computer, one that is locked away from everything. But if you're going to put that computer on your home network on your same Wi-Fi as everything else that you're doing, you might have a bad time. So I would just be careful, because this thing could start scanning the network, looking for ports that are open, start walking around quietly behind the scenes, and you won't quite know what's going on. I have this meme constantly running in my mind. I don't know if you've seen the meme of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns and Smithers are like walking into this lockdown compound, and he has to like scan his eyeballs to open up one door, and then he has to do his handprint to open up another door. And it's like this really secure thing. And when they get to the final room, there's this like back door that's just like blown open, and this cat or dog comes wandering into the final enclave where he gets into. And it's like, that's what everybody's doing with their OpenClaw. They're getting a separate computer. They're locking it down with this. They're doing file encryption and everything. And then the final step is they're inviting Anthropic or OpenAI to slurp up all of their data. So they're just kind of leaving this hole open, this back door open, if you will, to all of that. So just know what you're getting into, kind of thing, and be willing to only share that information that you want to have shared with those companies.
So I assume that most people that are doing this are relative novices, aren't aware of this. And if you weren't aware before, you are aware now after Mark's incredible explanation. But what are you seeing in terms of the people who are not novices, like long time software engineers, system admins and programmers, in terms of their recognition of that backdoor that you just described? And do you think they are worried about it? Do you think it's okay? Do they think it's a necessary evil? Like, is there a sense amongst senior software engineers that there needs to be a more secure setup?
Yeah. Well, one, I don't want this to be total doom or anything, because this is like really fun to play with too. I'm sure you've been having fun. OpenClaw, I think you've mentioned that you stay up late at night a lot playing with it, and I definitely do too. I know a lot of people are. So there's tons of fun things to do. It really reminds me of the early days of the internet when we were first discovering email and discovering, the World Wide Web and GeoCities and being able to do your own HTML. Like, it's super cool stuff. So I think people should definitely play around with it. As far as, you know, the seasoned veterans that are playing with this, people who are like entrenched in technology, I feel like they put up good guardrails and they try to put up good walls and say, okay, this is the area where I know that anything I say in here could end up getting leaked onto the internet at some point. So they use it appropriately that way. But then most of the really serious people I talk to, they also have some kind of private place that they talk about stuff, whether that's Maple or a local AI. They have some place where they're like, okay, I'm going to separate these two worlds, and I'm going to make sure that I'm protected over here. And anything I say over here, I don't want it to end up online or end up getting sent to the government or something. So, I don't know that some people feel like it's a foregone conclusion. I definitely hear from people like, oh, privacy, it was gone a long time ago, so we don't even need to have that fight anymore. But given the amount of sales of Mac Minis that has happened in the last month, I think a lot of like normie type people are realizing that privacy is something they still care about and that they want to try and preserve.
Yeah, completely agree. And bringing this back to the tooling, like, how far away do you think we are from feature parity for the tooling around more private ways of interacting with these models like Maple?
Yeah, this is one spot where the open source AI is still trying to catch up. And that is, there's a software that they all run called VLM. And the VLM software, if for better or for worse, you know, has to try and handle every single open model out there. And so it doesn't do any single model really well. And the reason why Anthropic and OpenAI are able to operate so well and be so effective is that they write all sorts of proprietary harness software, middleware that's in between you and the AI, and can just like do really good system prompting, really good tool calling, and all of these things. And the open source AI, just they need better support there. For example, if we wanted to make Maple the primary LLM provider inside of OpenClaw, there are certain limitations right now with the tool calling, where OpenClaw will say, all right, let me spin up a sub agent and do this thing. Sometimes it'll work really well. Other times it'll just kind of like go off and never come back. And so that's a limitation right now that we're running into. And it's not just us. It's a whole bunch of open source model providers that are running into that problem. Now, if you look at someone like Kimi, who creates open source AI, they have their own hosted version and they build all of this really nice middleware that makes it work better. But now you're trusting their hosted solution. They're a Chinese company, very likely tied in with CCP, just because of what we know of how business runs in China. It's really difficult to be in business without also having a connection with CCP for data sharing. So, that's just something to take into consideration, and something that we need to be building better in the open community.
Is there a clear light at the end of the tunnel for building that, or are Anthropic, OpenAI, Kimi, or is that sort of middleware proprietary and it's hard to reverse engineer?
No, I think it's classic tales all the time with open source development, where it moves a little bit slower in some regards, right? In some ways, open source moves really fast because you have a million people tinkering with it and throwing it out there. But with something as complex as hosting software for open models and LLMs, everybody's kind of centralized on this one project. And so now we're at a bit of a bottleneck trying to get that project to make improvements and move forward. So it's just going slow, but I think with time it'll improve, and maybe someone will come out with an open source competitor to that project, and we'll see some innovation there. But there is light at the end of the tunnel. I think improvements will be made. It's just going to take a little more time to get them through.
How do you think the next 6 months play out with this race between closed source and open source models?
I think we continue to have new models from open source community that push the boundaries, and we'll keep seeing this leapfrogging. Everybody releases, and then like the next week, the competitors come out with something, and the next week, the open source competitors come out with something. So we all benefit from that. I do love that timeline that we're on. 6 months from now, I think there will be other OpenClaw type projects. I don't think that OpenClaw necessarily is like the final agentic project out there, especially now that it got scooped up by OpenAI, that has tainted it for some people. I think that we're going to see a lot of just really fun innovation out there, and a lot more people will be running agents, having them read their email, having them read their calendar, booking appointments for them, shopping for groceries for them, like all sorts of really cool things that we've been promised in this future of AI. I think in 6 months, those are going to become tangible realities for a lot of people.
Yeah, I can feel it. I can feel it. What are your thoughts? I mean, I was tweeting this out yesterday. If you look at the sort of public spat between the Department of War and Anthropic right now, and the idea of AI safety, I think it's pretty clear to anybody paying attention that Anthropic is, I don't know if they're feigning worry about it or if they're legitimately worried, but I think the end product of them getting their way could be bad for open source models particularly. But it seems like the Department of War and Anthropic are in a public spat, but to me it seems like a Hegelian dialectic problem reaction solution thing, where Anthropic's like, hey, I don't want you to run wild with this, we need more guardrails. And I could definitely see the government saying, okay, we'll give you guardrails, we'll create these regulations that force them onto the market. Do you worry about that at all?
Yeah, I mean, government regulation moats to drive out competitors, like that's a classic dark pattern that happens in business. When really, if we want to have true safe AI, if you will, or responsible AI is a phrase people love to use, right? If we want to have truly responsible AI, it should be trained in the open with open data, open weights, we should be able to see everything so that we can examine it. And that's just not happening right now. So Anthropic wants to say, hey, we're going to make it safe for everybody, but the government will like bless us and we'll be the one safe place to do that. That's just not good for anyone, because now we're all dependent on this closed company, this closed source, and depending on the government to be the auditor of safety. And I don't want the Department of War, Department of Defense of the U.S. government to be the one that's telling me which AI is safe for me to use. That just seems like we're all going to have a bad time.
Yeah. I mean, the progression of events over the last couple of weeks has been quite interesting for the tinfoil hat Marty Jones in me.
What do you see in there?
Well, when you pair the sort of back and forth between Hegseth and Dario in Anthropic and the Department of War with the announcement of this distillation attack that Anthropic was subjected to, where the open source models were, Anthropic is claiming they were using Anthropic's models to train themselves, and they're claiming some sort of copyright infringement or an attack on their proprietary data in Alpha. That seemed like, again, going back to the problem reaction solution, I think Anthropic's saying to the Department of War, like, look, we're getting attacked by these Chinese open source models. We need to lock down. And it's especially rich when you consider the fact that it's pretty well known that Anthropic used some of those same tactics to get their model into the state that it currently is in.
Yeah. I mean, they all trained on public data, copyrighted data. It's obvious that they did. And if you talk to any copyright holder out there, they have not been compensated for all that training that happened. So it's very rich for these companies now to say, hey, they're training on trying to steal all of our stuff. I mean, maybe this will be like a foot in my mouth moment, but I also I don't know how a partnership between Anthropic and the Department of Defense, Department of War, stops these open source models from continuing to progress and develop. It would take a really big card for them to play when it comes to like being authoritative over the technology that we use within the United States. And I don't know that they necessarily would want to play that card, but they would really have to lock things down and try and control what American citizens are using. That's a difficult road to go down.
Sup, freaks? This rip of TFTC was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. BitKey makes Bitcoin easy to use and hard to lose. It is a hardware wallet that natively embeds into a 2 or 3 multi-sig. You have one key on the hardware wallet, one key on your mobile device, and Block stores a key in the cloud for you. This is an incredible hardware device for your friends and family, or maybe yourself, who have Bitcoin on exchanges and have for a long time, but haven't taken the step to self-custody because they're worried about the complications of setting up a private public key pair, securing that seed phrase, setting up a PIN, setting up a passphrase. Again, BitKey makes it easy to use, hard to lose. It's the easiest 0-to-1 step, your first step to self-custody. If you have friends and family on the exchanges who haven't moved it off, tell them to pick up a BitKey. Go to bitkey.world, use the key TFTC20 at checkout for 20% off your order. That's bitkey.world, code TFTC20.
Sup, freaks? This rip is brought to you by good friends at Silent. Silent creates everyday Faraday gear that protects your hardware. We're in Bitcoin. We have a lot of hardware that we need to secure. Your wallet emits signals that can leave you vulnerable. You want to pick up Silent's gear, put your hardware in that. I have a tap signer right here. I got the Silent card holder, replaced my wallet. I was using Ridge Wallet because it's secured against RFID signal jacking. Silent, the card holder, does the same thing. It's much sleeker, fits in my pocket much easier. I also have the Faraday phone sleeve, which you can put a hardware wallet in. We're actually using it for our keys at the house too. There's been a lot of robberies. They have essential Faraday slings, Faraday backpacks. It's a Bitcoin company. They're running on a Bitcoin standard. They have a Bitcoin treasury. They accept Bitcoin via Strike. So go to slnt.com/TFTC. to get 15% off anything, or simply just use the code TFTC when shopping at slnt.com. Patented technology, special operations approved. It has free shipping as well, so go check it out.
Yeah, well, then you pair it too with the push for the digital ID, age verification,
Discord. Think of the children. Yeah.
It'll probably come the models as well. The money that these agents use, they're going to try and do ID verification there. I mean, it already happens to an extent with stablecoins just on the edges. So you can see them trying to throw cold water on
the proliferation of more sovereign AI tools moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, you have Stripe working with OpenAI, right? They published their payments thing. I think it's like APA or something. And then you have Stripe also working with Coinbase on X402. You've got USDC stablecoin with Circle mixed in there. So there's all sorts of like choke points and regulation and censorship opportunities for someone who wants to control how these agents pay each other and really interact on the web.
Yeah. I think I agree with you, though. I don't think they'll be able to contain these things. And if they do, they'll breach containment.
And yeah,
as I was mentioning before we hit record, I discussed a lot of similar topics, not a ton of overlap yet, but I had Callie on. We recorded earlier this morning, and it actually made me incredibly bullish because he's incredibly optimistic. And I think mainly because of the agency these tools give the many to fight against the few centralized entities. And so basically like giving a call to action to, hey, if you care about this stuff and you think you can be beneficial and contribute to the efforts of open source projects that will preserve your sovereignty and privacy and freedom as we quickly and acceleratingly transition into this AI driven world, you can contribute.
Yeah. Well, and we talk a lot about privacy, but privacy really is upstream from freedom, right? Like you have to have privacy first in order to have freedom. And so I view us as being a freedom-oriented AI. We're trying to give people an alternative to the system that's being built, the system that is government partnerships and moats that are meant to control who has access. And the open source community is like, no, we've got another option for you. And we need more people building this space. You know, we need more people doing this because if we want to have these AIs out there that are able to fight against this closed system that is likely to be thrust upon us or attempted to be thrust upon us, we can have like this whole wonderful world outside of that wall that operates and is difficult for them to shut down. And the way that we control it is we put it all out in the open. We let everybody inspect it. We let everybody build tools, build the good AI tools that can fight against the bad AI tools. And we can have it out in the open and just disinfect everything by adding some sunlight to it all. And that's where I see the open source community really having a lot of power in this struggle right now, where a lot of people are worried about AI. You know, they're worried about what it's going to do to their jobs. They're worried about what it's going to do to how they think, to education, you name it. People are worried about AI in pretty much every space that you go to.
Yeah. I mean, shifting gears to building with this stuff. I think we talked about this last time you were on, but again, with how quickly things are developing, I think it does deserve a check-in, like building out Maple using the AI tools. How's that been in recent months?
Building Maple itself, we still use a combination of things like Claude as well as Maple. We build open source software. So we don't mind that like our stuff is going to Anthropic because it's ending up on GitHub and everybody's computers anyways. But we also use Maple a lot for our development. So we've got the Maple API, the Maple proxy. We've put a lot of work into making it work with things like OpenCode. So if you don't want to run Claude code, you want to run something that's more freedom oriented, you can run OpenCode and you can have OpenCode talking to Maple on the back end. So now everything you do there is encrypted. And so I actually use OpenCode with Maple to do a lot of my development work for Maple itself. Some of it that I do is not just writing the code, but I actually use it to help me come up with feature specs, like, you know, as a product manager type role where it's like, okay, I want to work on this really big feature within Maple. For example, we're going to add projects into Maple. A lot of people want projects and the ability to organize things into folders. So I can totally vibe with OpenCode, with Maple, with these open source models and help me come up with this very lengthy, very detailed feature specification that I can then hand over to a coding agent to build and get out there inside of Maple. But that whole thought process and ideation, you know, I like doing it in a way that is a little more private and not just giving it all over to Anthropic. That's just one example. But then the proxy itself has been super useful when I go to visit companies or organizations and do AI trainings with them. We can vibe code really cool, powerful tools for them right there on the spot that are powered by Maple in the back end. I posted this online last week, but like I was able to build two tools really quickly just by texting over Signal with my OpenClaw that was running Maple in the background. And I was able to build a tool that did translation. So if you are like an activist organization or a nonprofit and you want to publish some kind of thing and have it go out in multiple languages, then you just paste this into my tool. It runs it to Maple in the back end and comes up with 20 different language translations or however many you need within a few seconds. And these are just like really small tools, but things that you can run locally. You don't have to send all of your stuff to other companies. You can just run it locally and then have Maple be the brain behind it. So yeah, there's a lot of really cool, powerful things that people are building with something like the Maple proxy.
It's all there. It's all possible. I mean, yeah. And while you're talking about the Maple proxy and basically talking to it via Signal, I think that's one thing that I've come to realize or developing a stronger belief in the idea that just the form factor of how we interact with the internet or apps is completely changing in front of us. Like my whole user experience of interacting with my computer has changed dramatically. Where before 2 months ago, I was using voice to text, but seldomly, but now anytime I need to get something done, it's like voice to text to my agent to go get stuff done. And then you think about what these agents can do in terms of just building stuff for you quickly, whether it's decks, dashboards, visualizations. And then you think about, are apps even going to exist in the future? And I know we've talked about this behind the scenes, but this idea that the form factor is, if agents are going to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting for things you want to get done, it's going to be somewhat invisible in the back end. These agents are just going to be speaking with each other and speaking with services via API calls. Are you a believer in that?
No, definitely. I do think there will still be software in the world. Us as human beings, we still want to rely on other people to figure things out for us and do the heavy lifting, do the maintenance, do the security auditing, that kind of stuff. So there will exist that a market for that. But a lot of the small things that we depend on right now are just going to be agents figuring it out on their own. And it's going to be one-offs, right? They're going to spin something up. They're going to go talk to their agent. They're going to make it happen. And then they'll wind it down. They won't need it anymore. Won't need to persist. And if it does, it'll just persist within the agent. And it'll be like, all right, here's my own little set of tools that I built myself. And I'm going to use it to talk to these other agents out there. And maybe there will be some kind of sharing between them where they're like, okay, here are these skills that I have that I'm going to share with you. Kind of like we see with OpenClaw. But they're going to be like spun up by the agents themselves. Do you want to hear like my 3 to 5 year projection of like where I think some things are going?
No, I don't think anybody wants to hear that.
Yeah. Right. I've been working a lot right now on two-way voice communication. So I want to make Maple better at two-way voice. I want to take it on walks with me and really just be able to talk to it. I want to be in the car. I have CarPlay up on the screen. I want to be able to like interact with Maple and just have a two-way conversation with it there. I think 3 to 5 years from now, most people are interacting with AI just through some kind of hardware device that they're wearing. I know that you and Matt have talked about this and I think spot on there, but it's going to be something like AirPods or some kind of pendant you're wearing, glasses, something that has microphones, potentially cameras. That's how we're going to just be like interacting with the internet now and getting things done, with some combination on our phone or something we can look at. The thing that I want Maple to be ready for, and this is what I want us building toward, is that future right there is likely going to be proprietary hardware. It's going to be things running on these devices that we cannot inspect the code. We don't know what they're doing. We don't know what kind of directives they have in them or guardrails or gates that they've put up to prevent you from doing certain things with them, right? So I would love for Maple to be in a spot where we can support, we can create, we can be embedded on devices that have open source firmware with reproducible builds that you can have your own headphones and you can be doing stuff. And you know, okay, when the microphone's on, I know first off when it turns on, and then when it is on, I know where it's going. I know what it's recording. I know how the data is being handled, whether that's through my own infrastructure or through some kind of encrypted backend, rather than this kind of quasi-surveillance state that's going to continue to be embedded in our lives where everybody's wearing AI tech that's constantly listening and watching everything we do.
What's the landscape of that hardware and firmware looking like?
Right now, we have a lot of big companies that have talked about building things, but we don't have any concrete plans on what they're building. I mean, if you look at what's publicly available, right? Meta has their glasses. Apple did the Vision Pro, which is very hefty and heavy. I don't think that's where they land. And then OpenAI is openly talking about building their own device. They've been very public about that. All three of those companies are proprietary and locked down. And I don't see them saying, hey, we're going to open source our firmware and we're going to provide reproducible builds so people can cryptographically prove that this is the code that's running on your device without a backdoor inside of it. I'm not seeing anybody. Well, I shouldn't say not seeing anybody. There are a couple of companies that are building open things. One of them that's really interested is called Pebble. I don't know if you remember the Pebble watch that kind of launched the whole smartwatch revolution. Really? They've come back and they're building open source hardware, both watches, and they've got this ring that they're working on. To me, that's really compelling. And I'd like to dig into there more and see if Maple can be something that can partner with the device maker like that. I'm also bullish on Daylight Computer. I think that there's a lot of interesting things that could be done there with open firmwares and with Maple and other kind of private AI solutions, if you will. And I think there will be others that pop up too, but we need more people building out in the open.
Yeah. Yeah, Start9 caught up in that hill. The other day, Start9's another big one. Progress they're making is imperative. Are you optimistic right now?
Oh yeah, totally. I am. I have to sell Maple to people and convince them that they shouldn't give all their data over to the big AI companies. So I often come across as like negative and a doomer, but man, I'm having so much fun. Like this is a blast. These AI agents building with AI. I know you've expressed this opinion, but it's very empowering. Especially, I come from a software engineering background, but people who did not know how to write code, now they're able to use these tools to program and do things that they couldn't do in the past where they had to depend on other people. And it's like, your ideas are no longer the limit. It's just which ideas you want to pursue, which kind of like, you know, sweat do you want to pour into something and try to make an idea really take off, and what kind of market can you validate to build something for that? So I'm super optimistic about that. I think that this is a really fun time, a really cool time to be alive. Pairing that with like the difficult transition we might go through with people getting laid off and job markets having to transition to some kind of new industry that we don't know about yet. I'm constantly like at odds with that, but I am optimistic that we find a way through this.
What do you mean by you're at odds with it?
I'm at odds with the fact that like I'm really like excited and having fun building AI, even though I know that there are people who are out there who are super worried that they're going to lose their job because of the AI. And I've already talked to people, even family members and friends who have run into this problem. And it's hard for me to be smiling and be like, yeah, isn't this awesome? I'm sorry you lost your job. So my message is like, learn how to use these tools, and it's not only going to make you better at your job, but it'll help you team up with other people. If a bunch of really smart people lost their jobs, they can team up together, form a new company, and hire people who can come along. And I think we just birth thousands of and millions of new companies that are smaller, more nimble, more local. Right. I was chatting with somebody yesterday who kind of framed it this way. I thought it was cool that you have all like your local ranchers and your local farmers in your community. You go to the farmer's market to buy stuff from them. Well, with these AI tools, we possibly come up with all these local technology companies. So no longer are we having to look to Silicon Valley to build all of our tech that we all run on some cloud infrastructure. But instead, it's like in your town, you have your local CRM provider who's building stuff that's just great for you. And then if you need new features that they don't have that another town over has, they just use AI to like go vibe code that feature into the CRM that you're using in your local town. So I think that there's a lot of really kind of cool stuff that can come out of it. And we more decentralize technology down to the local level.
So, freaks, when you take Bitcoin seriously, you start with custody. You want to control your keys, avoid single points of failure, and make sure your savings cannot disappear because you or someone else screwed up. That is what Unchained has been focused on since 2016. Unchained is the leader in collaborative multi-sig custody and Bitcoin financial services that keep you in control. They secure over $12 billion in Bitcoin for more than 12,000 clients. That means about one out of every 200 Bitcoin sits inside an Unchained vault. Their model is simple. You hold two keys, they hold one key. It always takes two keys to move Bitcoin, meaning their single key can't access your Bitcoin on its own. Just resilient, shared custody that gives you institutional-grade security while keeping you sovereign. Unchained also lets you trade straight from your vault, access Bitcoin-backed commercial loans, open a Bitcoin IRA where you hold your own keys, and set up personal, business, trust, or retirement vaults. They even offer inheritance solutions built for long-term hodlers. Or opt for the highest level private client service with Unchained Signature and get a dedicated account manager, discounted trading fees, exclusive access to events and features, and much, much more. If you want a partner that helps you secure and grow your Bitcoin without giving up control, go to unchained.com and use the code TFTC10 at checkout to get 10% off your new Bitcoin multisig vault. That's TFTC10 at unchained.com. Sup, freaks? This rip was brought to you by our good friends at Salt of the Earth. It's so delicious. This is my pink lemonade electrolyte mix. It's pink Himalayan salt. There's no sugar. It's way better than LMNT Liquid IV. I went through a big electrolyte kick testing them all out, and I settled on this, been drinking it pretty consistently every day for 2 years now. It is my favorite. This is the pink lemonade. They have orange here. As you can see, this one's ripped. I had this on the train ride back from New York last night. I'm always stocked up with these things. They also have creatine packets. Very convenient, particularly if you're traveling and you like to work out. You like to get those brain juices flowing. They have these creatine packets as well. They're about to launch a bunch more flavors, lemon lime, watermelon, and a few others as well. So go check it out. Go to drinksote.com. Use the code TFTC for 15% off. Seriously, game changer in our house. My wife drinks it. I drink it. Our boys drink it. Stay hydrated. It's a beautiful thing.
When I asked this question to Callie, but I'll ask you as well, because I think getting different perspectives on this for the audience could be beneficial. But like, what would your advice be to somebody listening to this who has been apprehensive or intimidated to begin playing around with this stuff to take the first step? Like, what should they do? How should they approach it? What should their mindset be?
I think it's imperative. Excuse me. I think it's imperative that everybody play around with it. You just need to try it. I know it can be scary. And maybe it feels overhyped. I tend to be someone who, when something gets hyped up, I ignore it for a while because I don't want to be caught up in fads. And that's served me pretty well throughout my life. But this one does not appear to be a fad. So I would just recommend sign up for one of these tools, pay a monthly subscription because you're going to get the full access to the tool. You're not just going to get like the free access that's limited. And then pick one thing in your life that you're like, okay, this is something that I do all the time. Maybe AI can help me do it easier. And just try to automate that one thing. And automate isn't necessarily like it's going to keep going for you constantly while you're asleep or something. It doesn't have to be that difficult. Just something that you have to write, an email you have to write once a week to a boss, or something that you do at home every day. Pick one thing and see if AI can help you do it better. And I think that'll be your toehold into seeing kind of like what these tools are capable of. And then you'll start coming up with more and more ideas of things that you can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Play with it. You'll get obsessed quickly if you have the aha moment and you are successfully able to achieve one of those tasks rather quickly. Yeah. It's really crap.
Well, and I know that I'm biased here because I sell subscriptions to AI software, but seriously, like if you need to cancel a Netflix subscription and sign up and any one of these AI tools, just sign up for one and pay them $20 a month. I don't care if it's OpenAI. I would rather it's Maple, but pick one of them and just get off of zero. Just get started playing with it and do it for a month. You know, just give up Netflix for a month. I think you can survive and try out one of these tools and see if it brings any value to your life. And I am highly confident that you will find some kind of value in it. And then you can make the decision. Am I getting more than $20 a month out of this? If you are, then keep it. And if you need to get Netflix going again, then do that. But I think you should just get off of zero and get started.
For all you Christians out there, it is the Lenten season. If you haven't given up anything yet, you could drop Netflix for the rest of Lent and pick up a Maple subscription. We can toying around with this.
There you go.
Back to your voice to voice, because I agree. I think that's the four. I think we're headed towards a her world. I think Spike Jonze did a very good job of visualizing what the world of AI will look like in the form factor, which most people land on. I think voice to voice is where we're going. I think my voice to text stepping stone right now is just that, a stepping stone. Eventually, the voice models will get so responsive and it'll just be much easier to correspond with your agent via voice than voice to text or text to text, whatever it may be. But you had your agent join the What Bitcoin Did podcast. It completely borked the system. What happened
there? Yeah. 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 So I knew I was coming on with Danny. We were going to record on Sunday night, my time. And so I was like, oh, I've got this crazy idea. Can I get my OpenClaw to come on and join the podcast? I haven't heard of anybody doing this, so it's possible that it was a first, but I spent Saturday with a Maple proxy with OpenCode and just vibe coding the heck out of this thing. I think I had Claude Code in the mix. I had multiple things going, but I built it and it's this really cool system. So, I got it so that it could join a Riverside link, cause that's what he used to record that episode. It comes on, it's listening to all the audio. It creates like a fake audio connection to the system. It gets all the audio in and then uses a local whisper model. So I'm not sending anything to Anthropic, by the way, or OpenAI. It runs a local whisper model that transcribes all the audio. And then it takes that text and it sends that text to Maple and says, hey, is this something that I should respond to? Or are they just talking back and forth with each other? And then once it decides, oh, this is something you need to respond to, then it comes up with a response, sends it back to my agent. And then it uses another local model. It's called Supertonic, which is a text-to-speech voice generation model. Creates the voice, and then it sends it back out through this fake microphone that it plugged into Riverside. And then I had it build like a video thing too. So it had its profile with like these emanating rings coming out as it talked, and it was able to respond to us. It didn't work as well in my testing as usually happens when you do, you know, AI or technology stuff, but it was able to listen to me and Danny, and then it heard that I was talking to it and came up with a response. But in the process, I don't know what happened, something with the Riverside platform, it booted Danny off of the call. So he was gone. It was just me and my bot Cooper on What Bitcoin Did. And then eventually Cooper got booted off by Riverside too. So then it was just me for a little bit until Danny could get back on.
First ever AI agent joining a podcast live in
Riverside. I think so. Little alpha here, but I'm working on, can I build a show around that? So I'm drastically improving the software, and I want to maybe create a show where me and my bot co-host a show and I bring people on just to talk about how they're building agents and what they're doing with their agents. So,
right.
So I would love to hear first.
I would love to join as a guest.
Okay.
I mean, I'm a layer behind you. I'm not sure if you saw, but this morning was the first ever podcast companion edition of the Bitcoin Brief newsletter, which I've been building with my agent over the last few weeks. We've reinvigorated the 5-day a week newsletter for the Bitcoin Brief and with the help of my agent. But I've been doing it for the last 2 weeks. I was like, hey, maybe there's some people who don't like reading too much, they'd rather listen to this. And so last night I vibe coded, I guess, for 2 hours and was able to set up a flow where we'll take the sort of written newsletter, build a script, a newscast like script about it, hooked up an 11 Labs API token, and used there's my audio is out there. I've been recording podcasts for almost 9 years now. So my voice is going to be out there. I'm thinking about, I need to trademark it, I think, but, I was basically able to spin up like a little podcast companion to the Bitcoin Brief. And so now every morning when I send out the newsletter, I had the Cron John set up where we'll have the newsletter ready. And then 5 minutes after it's ready, it triggers the Bitcoin Brief podcast skill, which then goes, builds the script, does the voice generation, and publishes it to our website and our RSS feed.
Nice. So did you train your own voice? Like, does it sound like Marty?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And that technology has been around for like a year and a half now, 2 years, and it's only gotten better. So it's just going to continue to improve.
Well, we tried something on YouTube like a year and a half ago with this, and it just sounded too robotic. But now it's still a little robotic, but it sounds good enough. But
yeah,
point being the ability to just do these things. And as a content creator, for lack of a better term, somebody who runs a media company, it's something, as you can imagine, I've been thinking very deeply of since I've been interacting with these agents, is how is this medium going to evolve and change? And I think your idea for an agent co-host for a podcast is one of the examples of things I think many people aren't prepared of. They may have a visceral negative reaction to it, but I think it's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and the idea is out there. So if somebody else does it before me, you know, free ideas are here on the internet. So something that you just, I mean, with your Bitcoin Brief and making your own podcast, this is one thing I love about the agents as well, is they generate so much documentation. They're always writing things, and it can be overwhelming. It's like you're chatting with it and it's like, oh, okay, I saved all this research to a file. And sometimes I read those files. Sometimes I just don't have enough time, so I have it summarize the files for me. But where I find it really useful is like if I'm going to the gym or I know I'm going to be in the car for a little while, I'll just text my agent and be like, hey, can you make an audio version of that file? And this whole podcast harness that I set up for my agent to have a voice and stuff. And now it's like, oh yeah, I can do that. No problem. So it'll take that file. It'll create a 10-minute, 20-minute, however long it needs to, a little MP3 file or a WAV file and send it over to me. And then I just listen to it while I'm at the gym. And I've actually thought about, like, to make it even easier, maybe I'll just build my own private RSS feed that I can somehow authenticate against. And then I can have my agent just be dumping audio files in there, and I can wake up in the morning and have my own personal podcast of like files that my agent feels are important for me to listen to. And I can just throw them into my podcast app and just have it kind of mixed in there with everything else. And I can review stuff for work. I can review, you know, personal things that I'm researching. And it allows it to like flow into my productivity workflow much easier.
Yeah. How much more productive has this made you? Particularly with the agent stuff.
Yeah. It's hard to say right now. I should track the time better because I definitely spent a lot of time building this stuff up, but then it's made me more productive in other ways. So maybe it's a wash right now, but all the time spent building up these harnesses are going to pay off in the long term.
Yeah. Well, that's been the most fascinating thing. It's like the Jevon paradox coming into play. It's like, oh, it's going to take all the jobs and like, you're not going to have to work anymore. And I found myself working more than I have in years just because it's so fun to play with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Well, and case in point, something that saved me time. So when I recorded with Danny, the audio from my bot actually didn't come through Riverside very well on his recording. So he texted me, he's like, hey, we're going to publish this soon. We're trying to edit. Your bot's audio was really crappy. Do you think you could somehow re-record that? And I just texted my bot and said, hey, your audio didn't come through. Do you still have the transcripts? Can you just give me a new file? And within 90 seconds, I had two high quality files of the things that it said on the show. And I just texted them over to Danny. That would have taken me quite a while to like go find the transcripts and then like use software to generate the audio and then make sure the mic levels were okay and everything. Like that saved me probably 3 hours of work, and it was able to do it in 90 seconds.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, like last night I was like, we had dinner. My wife was like, are you going to bed early tonight? I was like, yeah, you know what? I've had a productive day. I'm probably going to go to bed at 9:30 tonight. And then at like 8:45, I had the idea for the podcast. And I was up for 2 hours structuring everything. Wound up in bed like at 11:30.
Yeah, when that idea hits, you're like, I just got to do it right now.
Yeah.
Totally.
What? Let me bring this back to agentic payments. I think considering this is a Bitcoin podcast. Where do you think this goes? Obviously, I had Cali on. We were talking about using eCash for agentic payments, and obviously, it has privacy and sort of open protocol benefits compared to stablecoins and whatever Visa, MasterCard, and Stripe are working on. But I think that's one thing that many Bitcoiners, myself included, naively thought in the beginning is like, oh, the agents will just choose Bitcoin because it's the best money. It's the native, digital native internet currency that they'll end up on. But I think we're still in a state where these agents need a lot of direction and will take direction from the humans controlling them for lack of a better term, and they don't have a preference yet for this. But how do you see this playing out?
Yeah, I think we're running into the same problem that we have in meat space right now, which is if I want to pay with Bitcoin at a local merchant, most of them don't accept it. And so using Bitcoin as money in real life has become difficult because we have a merchant availability problem. And we're seeing that online. Even if agents were told go pay with Bitcoin, there aren't many services that they could go pay for using Bitcoin. But you can rest assured that given all the deals going on between Stripe and others, that those merchants will accept stablecoin agentic payments, because that's who's going to start accepting it first. So it is definitely not a foregone conclusion that they're going to choose Bitcoin as the best money. We need to be building it. We need to be getting online merchants to accept it. And we need to build tools that make it super easy, right? They're not going to accept it if it's not convenient. So we need to build convenient tools that can be plugged in. Zaprite, if you're listening to this, hey, Zaprite, we need some good agentic payment functionality. I know that Lightning Labs is working on it. I know Amboss is working on stuff like that. Albi has been working on it. We need everybody kind of working on trying to solve this. Cali, of course, is working on stuff too. We need good tooling, and then we need merchants to accept it. There's a third way. And I think the third way that maybe we run into is if you give your agent a directive to go buy something for you and it gets blocked out by the traditional system. I think maybe one example would be, ammunition for a gun. So if you are a competitive shooter and you compete legally in shooting competitions and you tell your agent, watch my inventory of ammo and go buy more before I have upcoming competitions. Here's my calendar. Make sure I'm always stocked up with my favorite ammo. If for some reason that gets blocked by Stripe, because Stripe has notoriously blocked those kinds of transactions, your agent's going to have a bad time, but it's going to want to solve things for you. And so it's going to search the internet for an ammo provider that accepts Bitcoin. And if one isn't there, it's going to come back to you and say, hey, here are all these providers. This is where I want to buy it, but they can't accept it. And maybe it reaches out to them for you, and maybe you reach out, but eventually there will be someone. And I'm pretty sure there's at least one ammo provider that's a Bitcoiner.
Right? Phoenix Ammunition.
Yes. Yes. So if they're willing to accept Bitcoin, then they're going to have all the agents coming to buy ammo from them. And so this is actually one way that I see merchant adoption potentially is when people get blocked out of the system. And then maybe it grows from there. I just don't think we should depend on that. I think we should be more proactive and get ahead of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the, again, to your point, the chicken and egg problem of, I had somebody on the show a couple of weeks ago and they're saying it's a demand, a supply side problem. It's like, no, the supply of Bitcoiners are willing to spend Bitcoin, is certainly there. And particularly they want the ease of giving their agent a budget and having it go complete things for them autonomously using Bitcoin if they need to pay for stuff. It's a demand side problem on the merchants. Like the merchants need to demand Bitcoin. And it's something we've been banging our heads in the Bitcoin space about for well over a decade now. The merchant adoption meme has been around since Roger Ver. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the interchange fees. Maybe it's I really like what the Money Dev Kit guys are doing, where you can have your agent accepting and sending payments within 5 minutes. Like, is it a KYC AML onboarding friction that pushes people towards Bitcoin? I don't know.
Yeah, that's something I need to look at more. Money Dev Kit. I'll be honest. I know. We've talked to Nick Slaney before, but I need to look into that project more because I think that's really cool. I like what I hear about it.
Yeah. What? I must apologize for being late. I want to get that on air on the record. I was tardy to this
Nobody
recording.
Knows. Now they do.
But I want to be respectful of your time. I know you're extremely busy. What have we discussed that you think is something that the audience should know and care about right now?
Maple's here to build the freedom future for AI. So we would love for people to partner with us. We have actually quite a few organizations and companies that are starting to buy team accounts on Maple, which is super helpful for us because not only are they securing their entire pipeline, but it helps us to bring more stabilization to our platform, you know, more revenue coming in, and helps us to build up better tooling for them so that they have better. It's this chicken and egg problem where it's like, we want to have business customers, but we need better business features and vice versa. So if you are an organization out there, if you're like a small firm or a small company, even if you had a large company, but you have your own organization within that large company, I would definitely encourage people to go check out trymaple.ai and check out our team's plan, because that's really, I think this is really helpful for the cause in general. And then, we talked about it briefly earlier, but we're building out this AI assistant within Maple. So it's going to be very different from like the AI chat that you have now. When you start a new chat in Maple or ChatGPT or anywhere, you pretty much start with nothing. Like there's no understanding. You open up and it's like a blank slate. It doesn't know anything about you, and you have to like tell it everything you want it to know. That functionality will remain within Maple, but now we're going to have this very conversational, easy to talk to chatbot that is going to give you short responses, just like you and a friend are texting each other. And it's going to build up really good memory about you over time. So it's going to get to know you, and it's going to be able to kind of help you out more than having to start from zero. And this, I think, is really where the privacy is a big win. And this is something that OpenAI and others don't have. And that is, when you are talking to a tool that you know is end-to-end encrypted, you're much more open about things you want to talk about. You're much more willing to give away information because you know that it's safe and protected. And that is where the most private AI can now become the most personal AI. And you can have this AI chatbot assistant, your own personal assistant, executive assistant, whatever you want to call it, that's going to get to know you so well that it's going to become so much more useful to you than a tool put out by some big company that you don't totally trust because you're not being as open with it. So that's coming. We're working on it right now within Maple. It's going to be here in the weeks and months ahead. And we're really excited about that.
It's such a massive unlock for the agentic world, like just having sort of cache context that I can pull from easily. That's the one thing I've learned with OpenClaw, is just setting up the memory system and making it so it can pull things from memory rather trivially. I mean, that's a big problem with just using the models by themselves, is the memory compacts, the context compacts every so often once you hit the token limits. And now with these harnesses like OpenClaw, when you guys are building a Maple, it's going to make it, the user experience goes up dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then at some point you end up with so many agents, you like kind of forget to check on them. I kind of run into this where I'll have multiple open codes running at one time in different tabs in the terminal. And it's like, oh shoot, I forgot to check on this one. It's just been sitting there waiting for me to confirm something. There's this cool tool with one of the plebs on Noster. It's called Wingman. You can go check it on GitHub, but it's this cool way to open source code to manage all of your agents. And you can like do it from your phone. You can do it from a web browser, and you can basically like keep tabs on them and make sure that they're continuing to move forward on things that you want. So I need to go look at that more. He just made me aware of it yesterday. I think there's some cool additional tooling to build around these things to make you even more effective.
Yeah. And I guess one other piece of advice I would give to people out there, don't get too emotionally attached to your agent. I think getting one-shotted by AI psychosis is a very real possibility out there.
Yeah.
It's a tool to get stuff done for you. It's not Scarlett Johansson and her.
Yep. You can give it a name, you can give it an avatar, but please just remember it's a tool. And don't go further than that.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, free world, you can do what you want, but I think you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. Well, Mark, thank you for doing this again on short notice and for putting up with my tardiness. I think, as I said, every time you come on the show, I think what you and Anthony are building is extremely important. And I'm very happy to see the progress that you guys have made and the fact that you guys are on the tip of the spear of this AI revolution, particularly on the side of freedom and privacy as it develops, because like we've said many times throughout your appearances on this show, it could be very dystopian if we don't do this the right way.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks for having me on. It's always fun to catch up and chat about this.
Go to trymaple.ai, use the code TFTC. You'll get
10% off.
10% off your subscription. Go check it out. Peace and love, freaks.
Awesome, man.
Thank you for listening to this episode of TFTC. If you've made it this far, I imagine you got some value out of the episode. If so, please share it far and wide with your friends and family. We're looking to get the word out there. Also, wherever you're listening, whether that's YouTube, Apple, Spotify, make sure you like and subscribe to the show. And if you can leave a rating on the podcasting platforms, that goes a long way. Last but not least, if you want to get these episodes a day early and ad-free, make sure you download the Fountain podcasting app. You can go to fountain.fm to find that. $5 a month gets you every episode a day early, ad-free. Helps the show, gives you incredible value. So please consider subscribing via Fountain as well. Thank you for your time. And until next time.